We're breaking down an insane week of trades and free agency. Odell Beckham is a Brown. What are the Giants doing? Le'Veon Bell brings a new dimension to the Jets. Gruden brings in more new faces to the Raiders. And safeties are finally getting paid. We're breaking it all down on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. This is a whirlwind week. I think this was legitimately a whirlwind week, Andy. I don't use that term lightly, but this was an insane week of player movement.
Probably the highest profile week of player movement in NFL history. For one, just one week in terms of scale of names, scale of numbers of big trades and signings, it was up there.
Huh. You went from all time to up there. That's okay. We'll cover
up
the whole
gamut
here.
Up there at the very top. Up at the very, very top. Agreeing with you.
All right. Fair enough. Let's get into it. Odell Beckham Jr., we're going to call this a headliner, and at the moment it is. Odell Beckham Jr. is on the Cleveland Browns, and we're going to talk about both sides of this, but let's start with the positive side, the optimistic side. Odell Beckham, Cleveland Browns, Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, later Kareem Hunt, once he's back from the 8-game suspension. This Browns team, are they the favorites in the AFC North now?
They're the most explosive offense on paper in the AFC North, so we can start right there. Defense is probably average. Here's what I don't what makes me pause on that, Gary, is because the Browns got so good, there's this illusion that the Steelers took a big step back. And look, losing Antonio Brown, that is a step back. They were without Le'Veon last year, so that's not as big of an adjustment. And then the Ravens defensively took some hits, but I don't think it's going to amount to a regression the way it would appear on paper. So I guess the Browns, yeah, if I had to predict, I'd probably predict them to win it, especially because I know other teams, you know, it's going to be half new division winners this year like every year. But I don't think they're the runaway favorites the way they're made out to be right now.
Well, I think there's something to be said for the fact that it probably takes maybe a year, maybe half a season to sort of get all these new guys to gel. I think throwing a quarterback receiver tandem in there and expecting them to click immediately is a bit much. I Brady and Moss did it. I don't know if it's really a usual thing to see that happen, though.
Well, I think their styles of play fit very well together. I would imagine that's going to click quicker than expected because Baker Mayfield is a pulls-the-trigger, turn-it-loose type of quarterback, and that's what you need to be when you have Odell Beckham, because where he beats you are on slant routes, which are inherently tight window throws. Those are not hard ones. And then at the intermediate and deep levels, and that's where Eli Manning was always very inconsistent with Beckham.
Yeah.
Mayfield really pushes the ball. Nobody attacked the seams more aggressively last year. Now, Beckham will not be running seam routes a whole lot, but the point is that 15 to 20 yard vertical type of area, Mayfield's very comfortable on that. So dig routes, post patterns, corner routes, just straight go balls. I think the whole route tree is truly available with Odell Beckham in this offense. I think it's a very good quarterback wide receiver marriage stylistically.
I don't know. I mean, Freddie Kitchens? This is a lot
not playing
for Freddie Kitchens.
He's not the quarterback. I mean, Freddie Kitchens. Everybody loved Freddie Kitchens a year ago. Now they have Beckham.
Yes.
So they say, oh, well, he know how to use Odell Beckham. What's he going to do?
No, I don't even think it's a matter of will he be able to use him or will he properly use him. I don't think there's necessarily a bad way to use Odell Beckham Jr. My question to you is, this is a lot for a first-year coach to take on, and we talk all the time about how, you know, good coordinators don't always make good head coaches. I mean, Freddie Kitchens is the guy who, you know, he went from, what, running back coach to offense coordinator to now head coach, and now he's got, he's got Baker, he's got Beckham, he's got a lot of talent to manage at this point.
And when you say talent, are you talking about personalities to manage as well?
Big personalities. And you know, I think you could go back to the Giants and you could go back to really any team in the NFL and say if you win games, that keeps everyone happy.
Absolutely.
But, there's somebody said for receivers. Receivers need the ball. You got a lot of mouths to feed there. I don't know. It's a heavy burden for a first-time head coach and a guy who hasn't even been in a coordinator position for very long.
I think the Jarvis Landry factor is a big deal. Some of that gets overblown. While they were roommates, they both played for Adam Henry, the wide receiver coach. They were a great talent if they were roommates. They were close teammates at LSU, yeah. Landry and Beckham. With what I've heard about Landry, he is a true through-and-through alpha male. And someone with the Browns last year told me, because Landry's, there's this misperception that he's a great precision. He's not a precise player. He's not a very good route runner. He's not great after the catch. He's talented and all that. But from a football standpoint, the way you teach it, the way you incorporate it in your offense, Landry can be a frustrating player. But someone with the Browns told me last year, you'd live with that because in our case, Cleveland's case, we needed that kind of attitude in the locker room. We needed someone to lift everyone else up, and he's just the ultimate alpha male. So Odell Beckham, who, and I don't know Odell Beckham at all, but don't you kind of get the sense he's not a true alpha male? He's got a different type of spotlight than a leadership spotlight. So I think this whole what big ado that's being made about the personalities, I do think there's something to that, and I think that is going to help the Browns a lot here. And I think Mayfield's personality matches up with those guys.
Yes. No, I think that's totally fair. It's kind of funny, and I will be a very unprofessional journalist and not be able to attribute this because I don't remember where during the week I read this, but you know, the two-minute personality scouting report on those guys when they were at LSU was that Landry was the alpha, and Odell was kind of the, you know, he's just sort of the dude. He was a really talented guy, really athletic guy, but he wasn't a big personality guy when he was at LSU. That was Jarvis Landry, and you know, Odell sort of became, because of the things he did on the field, sort of became something else in New York. But
it'll be interesting to see how often those guys align on the same side of the field, too. And then how often Beckham aligns, as we talk about it all the time, that X-ISO receiver, the lone receiver on the back side of the formation. Beckham will play there a lot. I imagine Landry will probably see zero snaps here. He's not that kind of receiver. You want to put him in route combinations. But I'll be curious to see exactly how they use these guys. Let's remember, Antonio Callaway can take the top off of defense as well. He's got a lot of learning to do, but you don't have to learn how to run fast. And if he's running fast through your secondary, whether you think he's catching the ball or not, you have to react to him as a defense. So there's a lot. It's not just that they've got great weapons in Cleveland. Nick Chubb's also a home run hitter and a sustaining back. These weapons all fit well together too.
David Njoku, completely forgotten now.
No, kind of. No, I thought about him. I've moved. I think Njoku's got a and I know we talked to him at the Super Bowl, and we're supposed to be friendly with him. I think he's got a step to take still, a big step to take.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think that's where he should be in his career right now. I don't think that's a criticism.
Yeah, I don't think he should be. I thought he'd be a little further along given his physical skill set.
Okay.
But I right. You know, you're right. The optimism more than cynicism with him is the fair way to go. And you're right. He's young and developing.
Let's look at the other side of that, and that's the New York Giants. And you can't get past the fact that they probably should have done this a year ago. They thought they were in a spot to compete, and they were not. They were fooled a little bit by that playoff season a couple years ago, and they weren't ready in the trenches. They just didn't have the can you say bad bones? Like, you would say a roster has, like, good bones. Can we say bad bones?
Like you mean like when a house needs a cosmetic house, yeah. Fixing, and so you want to, instead of saying the house is a pile of garbage, you say it's got good bones? Are you saying that about the roster?
That is correct. This is also a real estate podcast, so yes. The kind of terminology I use.
I don't know if you can say it has. You think the roster has bad, but if you believe it has bad bones, and you're saying it needs an overhaul.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at, aren't we? With the Giants.
I can't tell, and I feel like I'm just piling on because everybody has issued this criticism, and usually when everybody's issuing the criticism, it more often than not, everybody's missing something. But this idea that the Giants, they're kind of half in, half out on the rebuild, why'd they sign Golden Tate if they're going in a whole new direction? I get it. I don't quite see where they are at this either. Part of me thinks that whole Beckham trade, it's not a calculated move to let's hit the reset button. It's a move of, oh goodness, we didn't realize what a disruptive distraction this guy would be. Let's just hit that reset button.
I think that's fair. I think two things. I think they were over-optimistic about the roster last year and didn't realize how bad they were on the offensive defensive lines. I also think they made a bit of a leap of faith with Odell when they gave him the extension, that things would work out. And when you know, they got off to a rough start in the year, and they did the, I think they really, whether they should have or not, took a lot of offense to the fact that Odell did that interview with the Lil Wayne interview.
Yeah, they should have taken offense, but that was deplorable. That was like from a, if it were in a movie, you'd roll your eyes.
Yeah, it was eye rolling, but it wasn't. I didn't think it was particularly destructive. It was just kind of like.
Yes, it was. He criticized the play calling. He criticized the QB. He's got that damn rapper sitting there for no reason was ever given for that. And he did this weeks after getting his big contract. So it's not like their season was going south. That was such an attention grab, and that really changed the way I view Beckham. That's why I think you got to have a Landry around them, because you cannot have that guy being your alpha on the team.
Well, I think the Giants sort of felt the same way, and I think that's why they did decide to make this move in the end. This is where they're at. They should have made the move a year ago. I don't know. When we talked about this last summer, it was, you know, would you take two firsts? If the Rams gave you two firsts, would you trade Odell Beckham Jr. there? And we were kind of like, eh. They end up getting a first, a third, and Jabril Peppers, who is obviously still on his rookie deal at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I thought if you're going to trade Odell Beckham Jr., I think this is what you get for him. You get the 17th pick. You get a safety who you can squint and say, he might be something in a year or two here in our system, and you get a third-round pick. I think that was a reasonable price if you were going to deal him.
And I think if the Browns were to draft Beckham at 17 and then let's say they traded that safety and that third round pick to move up to get him at 17, everybody would say that's an incredible draft move. That's a big time steal. They got one there.
Wait, you're saying that
I'm saying the Browns came out great in this.
Oh yeah. No, great. Absolutely. I think it worked for the Browns, but I think the Giants, once they decided they were going to move on, I think this is basically the most you could get for Odell Beckham Jr., a wide receiver on a quarterback contract at this point.
Yeah, what did you think of Albert Breer's point that, and correct me, I believe he kind of touched on perhaps that contract was structured in a kind of a trade-friendly way. They made it in a way that, yeah, it's a big contract, but it's not an unmanageable contract.
Yeah, I don't think they were ever fully all in with Odell last year, and I think they were like 90% of the way in, but I think they gave themselves an out for this reason, for the fact that they maybe weren't quite as good as they thought, and for the reason that maybe Odell Beckham Jr. would do a tandem interview with a rapper who doesn't say anything and say some critical things.
Right, well, at least in the interview. I guess he's very poetic in his actual. So I already told you my Lil Wayne story, so we don't need to uncover Lil Wayne again. What's also interesting, Jabril Peppers stepping in for Landon Collins, that's getting overlooked. It's just getting tossed aside, like, okay, well, you know, he's a poor man's Landon Collins, and he is, but a lot of people are a poor man's Landon Collins, and you see how much Washington signed Landon Collins for. Theoretically, was that a good move by the Giants instead of paying super top dollar for Landon Collins, taking a guy who has a similar skill set and is not as developed as Collins, but taking him on his rookie deal and plugging him in there?
No, I was fine with that as well. Look, I think it would have been nice to take care of Landon Collins. He's been a team leader there. He's obviously, we've talked about it on the show, he's a guy who had, you know, came into the league as a flawed player. And he ended up making himself better, and I think that's something to be admired. It would have been nice to keep him around. He got taken care of. It worked out for him, and if the Giants are going to rebuild, then rebuild. Get the cheap young safety in. I don't know, we'll see how the next couple years play out, but you're probably not going to have to pay the kind of price tag for Jabril Peppers that you would have had to pay to keep Landon Collins in town at this point.
This roster needs a lot of help on defense overall.
It does.
A lot.
It does.
I mean, It's a bad defense. It might be the least talented defense in the league now, right down there with Oakland, I'd say.
Well, it's a stacked draft for defense. We'll see if they go that way and wait a year on the quarterback, or if they take the quarterback and sort of massage the defense later. But they are not in a position to compete in 2019 in all likelihood. But we will get to the Raiders in just a second, Andy. But first, a quick note here. You know, Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free, while other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners of the MMQB NFL podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. So I lied a little bit, Andy. We're not getting to the Raiders quite yet. We are going to get to them in a moment. But we're going to start with the Jets here and what they did. I don't know. We'll just stay in New York. How's that? We'll do geographically.
I like it. Well, second biggest move. I'll tell you this. I was shocked Le'Veon Bell announced where he was going hours after the Beckham trade. I thought for sure once Beckham hogged the spotlight there, not by his doing, I thought Bell, who seemed to kind of enjoy the spotlight leading up to this, I thought he would have maybe bump his big announcement back to noon the next day.
I can tell you that that me and Bette Marston were in a fantasy baseball draft together that night. And the
Bette
Odell
Marston
Beckham
is one
Jr.
of
trade,
our editors, for those of you who are not
editors,
in
yes,
tune with everyone behind the scenes at MMQB.
Well, she's also in front. She's front-facing sometimes on the Albert Breer podcast. She sometimes pinch hits there. So if you are a true fan, you'd know who Bette Marston is. But we were in a fantasy baseball draft. Odell got traded, so we had to scramble to that. And we sort of wrapped up the draft. And then Albert Breer sent us a text saying Le'Veon's going to sign tonight. So we were just grumpy. That's how it worked out that night. Too many signings at once. But Le'Veon Bell lands with the Jets. It's the end of it, and everyone can stop the pocket watching and decide, did he get a good deal or a bad deal? And then should he have sat out or not sat out? He sat out, and he came back, and now he's back, and he gets a fair amount of money from the Jets. What's the fit with Adam Gase's offense, though?
I think it's a pretty good fit. It's interesting. At the combine, I saw Adam Gase, and I raised the Tevin Coleman, Le'Veon Bell debate with him.
Yeah.
And I raised that totally forgetting that he was the head coach of the Jets at the moment that they were in contention for. And I feel bad. I feel like next time I see him, I'm going to apologize. I was not trying to get a scoop from him. And he actually gave me some honest thought. I think they all agree that they're typically an outside zone running team in New York. But if they're signing Le'Veon Bell, they're going to have to expand their running game. You can't just be an outside zone team because Bell's a much better inside runner than outside runner. So that's what we've been talking about with Coleman, who I think is the better outside runner. Bell's better at everything else, including inside runs. So I would imagine we'll see a pretty diverse rushing attack from the Jets. And then, of course, what Gase really likes is when he has a receiving back that he can move around. That's especially into empty formations. And Bell was a great empty formation receiver in Pittsburgh. So that's going to be a big part of what they do as well.
Absolutely. And look, even though they're rebuilding the offensive line right now in New York with the Jets, that's I think that's a good fit for them right here. And I just want to mention real quick, he got a lot of criticism for, the deal he signed was not what he would have gotten for the Steelers. And we got into practical guarantees versus injury guarantees versus full guarantees. And if you want full guarantees, get full guarantees. A practical guarantee is not a full guarantee. And a lot of people said, well, Steelers, 90% chance he would have made it through 3 years. Well, that's not a full guarantee. It's either a full guarantee or it's not. And the one other thing I'll point out is he wasn't able to test his market last year because he got the exclusive franchise tag. So he was not allowed to go out and see what kind of other offers would have been out there, I'm not going to get into a tangent on the franchise tag and how stupid and anti-labor it is, but that's one of the consequences of this, and that's why it's difficult for a guy like Bell to be able to judge his market, especially, I mean, we've talked plenty about the running back market, and this was before Todd Gurley had signed his deal and all that stuff, so Jets also brought in Jameson Crowder, so another nice piece, a precise slot receiver.
That's one of the other conversations we had with Gase is how much he values that slot receiver and especially the ability to run after the catch. And you look at their offense, what he does more than anyone is put three receivers on one side of the field and then the tight end by himself on the other side. And fortunately for them, they like Chris Herndon, their tight end there in New York. Jets fourth round pick a year ago. They really like him in that organization. I thought he looked good on film. I don't see everything they see, but they see more than I do. They see him in practice. So Chris Herndon, they're betting big on. So go out and fill those three receiver positions now. Robbie Anderson's probably your number one. He's probably a number two, but he'll be your number one. Quincy Anunua was a possession guy, but we need someone that can work that intermediate level and be a threat to run after the catch, and that's what Jamison Crowder brings for him.
No, it's good, and honestly, I feel like this Jets roster is already more talented than the one they had, or I should say the one that Gase had in Miami last year, certainly when you start factoring the quarterback. Other side of the ball, look, this was one of the more controversial signings. They gave a big contract to CJ Mosley. I'll just say this about Mosley. There's something to be said for just a reliable, you know, quarterback type in the middle of your defense, and I think it's, you know, is he going to quote unquote live up to that contract? I don't know. I mean, that's probably not. A lot of guys would not be able to because it's a lot of money. But I think CJ Mosley brings something of a steadying presence to a defense that is young and talented, and maybe didn't always achieve like they should have a year ago.
I agree with you. The other thing is, that contract, it's not just that he got a ton, it's the money relative to the team spending it. The Jets have a ton of cap space, and they know that, and so they have more money than everybody else, which changes the $51 million guaranteed to Mosley. That changes what it means to them versus what it would mean to, like, Baltimore, for example, who I bet they thought they were going to be able to re-sign Mosley and couldn't. Mosley is probably, depending on how you view him, number 8 to 12 if you're ranking linebackers across the NFL. He can do everything you want him to do. The one concern I have, though, is I don't think the Ravens felt he was a fast player. And the more they got to know him, the less they valued his speed. Now, they valued a lot. He plays fast, but he's not a fast mover. And that can limit some of the stuff you do in coverage, especially if you're a cover two defense where the middle linebacker, which is exactly where Mosley's going to play an every down, but especially passing downs. If that middle linebacker can't run down the middle of the field, if you don't trust him there, you are limited in cover two. And the Ravens played a lot less cover two last year. And I think Mosley and how they wanted to use him was part of the reason why. Greg Williams with the Jets, their new D coordinator, when he's not throwing these kitchen sink blitzes at you, he's playing some variation of cover two.
We're going to get to the Ravens and their facelift in just a moment here. And I swear I'm not just going to troll Raiders fans all show. We are going to get to the Raiders in just a moment. But real quick, I just want to mention, you know, guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than actually seeing a doctor. Hey, I'm guilty of it myself. And you know what? The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created a simple, secure way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMQB. Fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get genuine medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MMQB. That's GetRoman.com/MMQB for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/MMQB. Let's talk about the Raiders, because I keep on saying we're going to, and now we're going to. Antonio Brown is a Raider. We talked about that last week. You can go back to Albert Breer's show on Wednesday and listen to their take on that. You can get our take two back in your feed if you want to get the AB stuff. But they spent their cap room elsewhere. They brought in Trent Brown, who, and Andy, he goes at right tackle and Colton Miller at left tackle?
I don't know about that. We'll see. Brown can play both sides. He was pretty good at left tackle. I don't know if he was as good as he would appear from afar, because that offense is very friendly to left tackles. But he was effective there, and I liked his progression as a right tackle. remember, though, when we were doing this show last week, Gary Calucci-Simile got traded mid-show. And that opened a spot at left guard, and we thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. Well, now it looks, I would imagine they knew at that point they were getting Trent Brown, or at least had a very strong sense they probably would.
Yeah.
I don't think Brown's here to fill a vacancy at left guard. So I would imagine, I think Colton Miller could maybe be that guy. You put Brown at left guard. The hardest thing to do is go from playing the left side to the right side. It's not to go from playing tackle to guard. So Miller, what's that?
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah. I was just going to say, would you rather switch the young guy to the other tackle spot or kick him inside?
Yeah, I think I'd kick him inside because I think he has the body for it to be a guard. In my mind, I don't know what his measurables are, but in my mind's eye, he's a little bit of a squattier type of player. He's not a long-armed guy. He doesn't play very tall. So squattier bodies are meant for guard position. That's a good match. He was so up and down as a rookie, and he got better late in the year where I don't know if you want to mess with that development by now saying, okay, everything you learned, now do the opposite mechanically, which is what you say when you move someone from left tackle to right tackle. So what if they put Colton Miller at left guard, Trenton Brown at left tackle, you're rock solid on that side of the line then?
Presumably, yes. And Colton Miller, by the way, he does.
Yeah, you're right, presumably. You're right. We don't know what Miller would be.
I agree that he does not play up to his length. He's like 6'9". I mean, he was one of the tallest guys at the combine last year.
Colton Miller's 6'9"?
Yeah. He's a tall dude.
Is he really?
What made him so intriguing. He's tall. He kind of moves
I didn't know he was that. I mean, I probably should have known that. I didn't know he was that tall. He does not play big. I know that. If he's 6'9", though, and he did struggle with the bull rush last year, which implies that he's not playing low enough. Maybe he's not a guard. Maybe he's not a guard then.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was thinking. I just don't know how much you want to move a guy like that around at this point in his career. And you know, so many guys on this Raiders roster we looked at and said, well, Gruden didn't bring him in, so they're expendable. But he is not one of those guys. He's a guy they drafted a year ago. He was their first-round pick.
I know he was not their first choice at tackle, though. He was not who Gruden wanted most at tackle. So,
well, that's fair. I mean, it was middle of the first round.
He really, I am shocked he's 6'9". Yeah, and Arlads has him at left guard right now. I mean, I don't think you can play a guy 6'9" at guard. I didn't know he was that tall, even though he doesn't play that tall.
There are other moves. They get Tyrell Williams, so they have a second receiver, and Jordy Nelson is out. So you figure it'll be Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams on the outside and Seth Roberts in the slot again, which is, you know, it's encouraging. That's a better group than we were looking at a week ago.
I like Tyrell Williams as a number two. I think that's a very nice fit. Tyrell, you know what he is? Stylistically, I've had this conversation with Charger coaches because I said Tyrell Williams, big body, goes downfield. And they said, yeah, whoa, he's a big body, but he doesn't play big. He doesn't high point the ball. He's not really an over-the-middle type receiver that posts you up. He's like a 6'11 small forward who shoots jumpers really well. He looks like the part. He looks like he could get down on the block, but he's really a finesse player.
LaMarcus Joyner is another addition. They still need so much on defense, but LaMarcus Joyner is a start in the middle of that defense.
Well, because he can play safety or slot corner, and if he played both at the same time all year and they went with 10 guys, he'd probably be better than they were last year on defense.
they still have some work to do, but hey, they got three first-round picks. What's your I'll just ask real quick, because we talked about this a little bit last week with the Antonio Brown trade, but Derek Carr, yes or no, is he their quarterback next year?
Next year being 2020?
Sorry, no, 2019 or 2020.
I think 2019 he is.
Okay. One big development this week. And we wondered about it a week ago, but in free agency 2018, we looked at these safeties and said, why will no one pay these safeties? Why won't anyone sign these safeties? It was the complete opposite this year. So many big deals for safeties. And we're going to start in Baltimore, where the Ravens, obviously, they moved on from Eric Weddle, and they end up adding Earl Thomas. Mm-hmm. So now you have an Earl Thomas and
Tony Jefferson.
I almost called him Thomas Jefferson because now I'm saying Earl Thomas all the time. Earl Thomas, Tony Jefferson pairing in Baltimore, which Look, Earl Thomas, better physical talent on Eric Weddle. It's not even close. How long does it take to get a guy up to speed in a defense like this where you're constantly disguising?
That's interesting because I had half a dozen Ravens coaches, everyone from John Harbaugh to a defensive quality control coach, tell me at some point this offseason that Wink Martindale and the way they teach things there in Baltimore, it is so user-friendly and it's so innovative and off-the-charts creative that they believe they can bring in anybody and teach them anything within a pretty reasonable time frame. They're not, I guarantee you, especially with Earl Thomas, they're not at all worried about can he pick up the scheme or can we get him everything on his plate. I'm sure they'll feel comfortable with that going into training camp, I would bet.
This defense, man, this is going to be something. So Earl Thomas in, Eric Weddle out. Also, C.J. Mosley out.
Which is an upgrade, by the way. Did we talk about that on the show? That why would they get rid of Weddle? And we thought, well, they've got to be looking at one of these big-time safeties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did. Okay. Didn't we?
I've certainly talked about it a lot with Pete. I don't remember if we said it into the microphone or not, but the safety position in Baltimore, it's more critical in that scheme than it is in any other scheme across the NFL. So when they cut Weddle, I figured they've got to have Landon Collins on their mind, maybe Tyrann Mathieu.
Yep.
One of these safeties, and I think Thomas, so we don't think of him as a versatile guy, but he is a versatile guy. He more than fits the bill. It's a great upgrade for them.
And then we got C.J. Mosley out, Terrell Suggs out, Za'Darius Smith out. So it is a much different looking Ravens defense next year.
Those first two surprised him, I bet. I think they thought they would get – I don't know, no one's told me this, but I think they thought they could get Mosley back, and they have acknowledged publicly they thought they would have gotten Suggs back. So they – and they're not very deep at linebacker. Kenny Young's got some growing to do, very nice talent, but Patrick Owosu took his spot down the stretch last year. That doesn't happen by accident. So they got to find a linebacker, and then you want to get more talented off the edge. But what's interesting, Gary, they're so schematically driven, and their scheme derives from the back end. As long as they've got corners that can match up and safeties who can disguise, they can do everything else schematically. And so I don't think they're as dependent on front seven talent as other teams. They're very dependent on back level talent. They're secondary, which is why they've got four top corners. They've got two top safeties, but they don't need a pure edge rusher the way most defenses do, and they've got good defensive linemen still in Brandon Williams and Michael Pierce. So, Raven fans, you're worse on paper, but only from a Madden or fantasy type of standpoint. I don't think you're going to be very much worse. If you might even be better in reality with this offseason coming up, this offseason training program coming up.
Yes. Yep. So this Chiefs go with Eric Berry. They move on from Eric Berry and then bring in Tyrann Mathieu. Eric Berry, he couldn't stay on the field the last couple of years. It's been a pretty sad story since the opener in 2017, where he ruptured his Achilles in Foxborough. But look, they decided to move on. They brought in Tyrann Mathieu, and it's Steve Spagnuolo's defense now. And not only that, Dee Ford was traded to San Francisco, and we have Justin Houston is out. So Chiefs needed to hit the reset button a little bit on defense, but this is a bit of a reset here, a bit of a facelift.
Well, it's a schematic facelift, and then a facelift in personnel. And I understand all of it. I understand. I mean, let's remember, though, Matthew's a bit of a risk, too. You just got rid of an injured safety, but you signed one who's had injury issues. And we're all rooting for Tyrann Mathieu, but as I said last week, I don't think he's the same guy that he was in Arizona. And maybe he will look like that now that he's healthy this offseason. That's a big difference, too. He's healthy and he's training rather than rehabbing something. So he's theoretically getting better at football this offseason. So we'll see how that goes, but Spagnuolo's another guy, Gary. He manufactured pressure as well, kind of like what the Ravens do. He does it in a whole different way. He plays two deep safeties instead of one deep safety. He plays really pure zone stuff behind it. The Ravens show you zone, but it kind of turns into man-to-man depending on how the matchups shake out. So Spagnuolo's a different type of defensive coordinator. But remember, years ago, he also had when he had the NASCAR front seven and they went up against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, the undefeated Patriots, they were built around getting one-on-one matchups for their front four defensive line. linemen. They don't have the talent to do that, though, with Dee Ford gone. So I would imagine the Spagnuolo we've seen as of late, the one we saw more recently in 2016 with the Giants, 2017 as well, that's the one we'll see with Kansas City, not the one from 2007.
All right, and we should mention before we move on the Chiefs, we don't have details on it. Tyreek Hill is the subject of a law enforcement investigation in Kansas City. We'll see how this plays out, but as I said, we don't have information right now. He's obviously a guy who came into the league with two strikes on him, and if something has happened, the Chiefs are probably going to have to move on from him. But let's talk about a couple of NFC North teams real quick, especially with the safeties here. So the Packers go and end up poaching Adrian Amos at safety from Chicago, as well as they added two edge rushers in the two Smiths, Zadarius from Baltimore and Preston from Washington. But this Amos fit, Amos was such a was such a solid player in Vic Fangio's defense. Does it translate to a Mike Pettine defense here, or what are we going to see from him?
So what you get from a Fangio defense is two deep coverage, zone coverage, but it's always a hybrid coverage, and there's matchup elements and pure zone elements, and that's what makes it so difficult. That's the nature of Vic Fangio's coverage. Mike Pettine, it is a single high, so one deep safety, and it's a little bit more matchup driven, but they will play zone inside. They play man-to-man outside with the corners, zone inside. So Amos will still be one of those zone matchup type defenders. Now, when you play the way Pettine does, your zones inherently have matchup elements still, because they're just smaller zones in a smaller area. So The short answer to your question, Gary, I think the schematic transition will be just fine with Adrian Amos. And I think that he's what the Packers need too. Ha-ha Clinton Dix and how erratic he was in coverage, that was a big problem for them given the way they want to play. They want to disguise. They want to put you their back-level defenders on an island one-on-one and take their chances there to generate pressure. And they didn't have reliable safeties to do that. They've got one of those now. And then the pass rushers they signed, you called, and I'm not going after you here. It's not your fault, Gary. You're a better man than this, though. But you called him an edge rusher. Zadarius Smith's not an edge rusher. He's one of those schematic interior rushers, a lot like Pernell McPhee. Remember Pernell McPhee a few years ago, who was a former Raven? McPhee could always go left and right really well in confined areas. Now, McPhee was a better edge rusher than Zadarius Smith, but I think Smith is a better all-around, and at least a safer player than McPhee, because Smith doesn't have any injury history. So you're going to see him standing up and rushing, kind of like another analogy, Jadeveon Clowney in Houston, how they use him over the guard. He comes from a stand-up linebacker position. You'll get that with Zadarius Smith. They'll probably try it with Preston Smith. I don't know how that's going to go, but Zadarius Smith, that's an excellent fit for Green Bay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you'd look at anyone on the front seven right now and say, like, well, this guy is your, this is your number one pass rusher. This is your game changer.
No, not a half pass rusher, but I mean, Kenny Clark can be that guy. He's the guy at the front seven, though, would you say?
As a pass rusher?
No, just as the guy for the front. I mean, he can do that, but
yeah.
Okay, and then Mike Daniels.
No, I'm talking about like just the game-changing, disruptive pass rushing presence that obviously is always at a premium in the league. But they just have they have a bunch of solid dudes in the front seven.
Right, but and Pettine, though, remember, he's going to manufacture pressure more than anyone. It's in fact that's kind of the theme of these last little bits of conversation. The two teams I would say that aim to beat you with their scheme for their pass rush, they do it more than any teams, are Baltimore and Green Bay. And it's not a coincidence, by the way, because Baltimore, that whole thing started with Rex Ryan years ago, and Mike Pettine's a Rex Ryan disciple. So that's where that comes from. So, yeah, they don't have a true, pure pass rusher in Green Bay, but they don't need one. They're one of the few teams that don't need that.
And in Chicago, I mean, this was really the one hole on the Bears basically roster once Amos was set to move on. So Adrian Amos is out. Ha-ha Clinton Dix is in. I'll tell you, Andy, I can't get your read on Ha-ha Clinton Dix. I feel like sometimes you really like him and sometimes you're really down on him.
Yeah.
But he seems, if anything, he seems to bring a wider variance of performances than Adrian Amos. How's that?
Which is why sometimes I'm up on him, sometimes I'm down on him. He's like, well, are you a Seinfeld guy? I don't remember.
Yeah, Everyone's a Seinfeld guy, but yeah.
Well, no, there were some people that thought it was smart to be against it. You know, Seinfeld was like the high-level class, and then the remedial class was Friends. I didn't think you were a Friends guy.
No, not that a Friends show. Guy. No. No.
But the reason I remember the episode where the lady who looked hot in some cases, other cases she didn't look great. She had the bad lighting on the porch near the end of the episode.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's Ha Ha Clinton Dix for you as a player. His body is everything you could want in a defensive back. You don't always know where his technique or his reads will be. That's not a good equation in Chicago scheme. But remember, it's not Vic Fangio there in Chicago. It's now Chuck Pagano. And I'm sure Pagano will say, well, we're going to continue a lot of what Fangio did. He had a lot of success there. The reality is Pagano's had a lot of success, too, over the years as a defensive schemer. And I bet you he's going to eventually coaches coach what they know. And Fangio's stuff was so highly specific. And he took a lot of his back-level coaches, Brandon Staley, their outside linebackers coach, Ed Donatell, their secondary coach, good assistant coaches, followed him to Denver. So they don't have the guys there to teach Fangio's scheme anymore unless they want to put that on the players. I imagine we're going to see a Bears defense that looks more like kind of like the Packers and Ravens again, actually, with Pagano and his background. It's another Rex Ryan type of guy. We're going to see that rather than the Vic Fangio stuff. And then it's a discussion, okay, can we live with Ha Ha Clinton Dix in that equation? Still probably not, because if you could, you'd be in Green Bay still. But you don't have to be, the point is you don't have to be as buttoned up and disciplined to play under that kind of scheme of Pagano as you do under Fangio, where Fangio, it is so read and react and subtle, and it's a different type of approach.
All right there. NFC North right there is worth the price of your NFL Game Pass subscription next year.
Who do you, if you had to rank those teams real quick, 1, 2, 3, 4, with the Packers having a new coach, the Vikings coming off a down year, the Bears, are they real, are they not? Some changes on defense, Detroit spending a bunch of money in free agency. I know you probably would put the Lions far and away number one and make them your Super Bowl team again, but who would you have 2, 3, and 4 then, Gary?
Wait, you're putting the Bears one, and then how do you
rank
2, 3, 4?
No, I said you're probably, I put 2, 3, 4? But you said you're going to put, I figured you'd have the Lions one, because you like to make, you got so much attention for that last year.
I'm immune to your insults now, Andy. I think I'd still pick Vikings one. Look, everyone's putting the Bears one. Bears, yes, in theory, but since I'm just whispering in your ear right now, Andy, and no one will ever hear it, I'd go Vikings, Bears, Packers, Lions. How about you?
Vikings, Packers, Bears, Lions.
Whoa. Okay.
Oh, wow, hot. I switched the 2 and the 3 around in that order.
That's a take. The Bears all the way to 3rd? Such disrespect. Bulletin board material right there.
For him, who, for them? Andy Benoit's
sister?
By the way, can I, and I know I'm supposed to, it's probably something I ask you off air, but can I do an article on the Bears coaches film? Because I had a lot of coaches this year tell me we'd like you, and no one will put their name on it. So I get to be like an unnamed sources guy. It's a hot topic around the league. They all want me to do an article to try to get it changed.
Yeah. Yeah, I say do it.
I want to go to Chicago of coaches for it, though. I want to spend our travel money.
And find the cameras and
I want to go there and see why the cameras aren't where they are, and I talked to the video guy. Yeah, I want to do an investigative report.
Okay.
Well, I approval. Thank you. I will book
no,
it.
Well, no, you can do the story. You can't travel for it, though.
No,
I think
no.
Is what we're going to settle on.
You're handcuffed. We'll talk about it later.
Phone.
You're
Skype
handcuffing
it.
Me.
Skype it. All right, one more note before we get on to our lightning round. But Nick Foles officially signs with the Jaguars. We've talked about this a little bit before. I don't know. I just don't think they have the right kind of receivers for him. I think they're going to continue to struggle on offense. And let's see, you know, if the defense is all world again, that's a different conversation with them. But I feel like they just sort of position themselves to, I don't know, be kind of okay.
If you're going to play with Foles, you want to get the ball out quickly by design. That's the style of offense that he has run best over the years. They don't have a true number one receiver. There's no doubt about that. DJ Chark is probably their most talented guy, and he is viewed there as probably a number two, and that's assuming he's going to continue to develop, which he did not light the world on fire as his second-round rookie last year. But the other receivers, stylistically, Dede Westbrook, Marquise Lee, Keelan Cole, I think they can fit that kind of scheme, but there's nobody there that spins the coverage, that makes you react as a defense. So they need to get a better cast around Foles. It's not a great O-line. You all know what I think of Leonard Fournette. So I'm with you on that. But remember, there's a good chance their defense is going to be great again, even with some of the changes they made this offseason. And if it's great, then that changes the way you approach things on offense.
I just wonder if the defense stood on its head 2 years ago. It's obviously a talented defense, but are they an A++ defense or are they an A- defense? What? And that's the difference between 11-5 and 8-8.
Absolutely. What does that stand on the head mean? I think about that a lot because I hear about it with goalies, and I don't know why they say that. I would think you'd be worse at goaltending if you're standing on your head. Like, wouldn't you say he played on both of his skates tonight? He was right down there.
Standing on your head is just it's a difficult thing to do. It's not that difficult, actually.
No, I'd love that someone can tweet. We haven't asked for people to tweet us this kind of stuff in a while. I wonder if they have been. Tweet us what that word we could Google it too. But if you're still listening, tweet us what the hell that means. Stand on their head.
Yeah, I can't waste the keystrokes at Googling that. So please answer our stupid questions. Andy, we have a lightning-ish round before we leave. And so the challenge is each of us in 45 minutes or less. Your 3 seconds
or less. You're describing minutes. How our regular lightning round goes.
Yes.
We're trying to actually respect the lightning round and do 45 seconds or less.
In 3 hours or less, give me your 3 favorite or least favorite or just 3 most significant things. It can be stuff we touched on here. Just what did you like or hate about this past week?
What I liked most was the Tevin Coleman deal in San Francisco. And people know I like Tevin Coleman. I love Tevin Coleman on that team-friendly 2-year contract he got to go back into Kyle Shanahan's scheme. Shanahan thought he was the best runner or best running back weapon they had when he was in Atlanta with Devontae Freeman, and Shanahan was drawing plays for him. I love, love, love that acquisition. Another one, I guess I don't lie, I was a little taken aback by the Devin Funchess deal to Indianapolis and $10 million for that guy. I don't know. I didn't love that one. That's 2. What would be another? Give me one of yours and I'll think of my 3rd thing.
Well, I was going to counter your Funchess a little bit and not say that Funchess is a great deal, but look, he's flashed. I think on a 1-year deal, he's worth bringing in. We talk about Cam Newton and how he's not a precision accuracy thrower all the time. Going from Cam Newton to Andrew Luck, maybe you unlock a little something with Devin Funchess here because he's a physical talent. He's still a young guy. I think he's like 24 years old. He came into the league early. I didn't mind the signing on a one-year deal.
I mean, you and I can run with him.
He's not that slow. He's not, maybe you turn him into Alshon Jeffrey in Indianapolis. A potential nice compliment for T.Y. Hilton. I didn't mind it. It's a 1-year deal. Colts have all the cap room in the world. So to me, it was just a no-risk, possible reward type of deal.
Why would you get Funchess and not re-sign Dontrell Inman, who lit the world on fire for you in the playoffs last year?
That's fair. I think Funchess... precise. I think Funchess is a better physical talent, but that was actually going to be the first one of my thing. The Colts had all this cap room, and they really didn't. We say all the time, winning free agency doesn't mean you're going to win games. Colts sort of played it rationally, and outside of Funchess, they didn't really do anything. They re-signed Pierre Desir, which is something they should have done, but Indy was quiet, which I find interesting, if nothing else.
I wonder if it would have gone that way if some of the pass rushers, the edge guys, had not been franchise tagged. Clowney, who's not a pure edge rusher, but a good player, great player. DeMarcus Lawrence and Frank Clark, those guys. D Ford, who I guess they maybe could have traded for it. They need an edge rusher badly in Indianapolis. Yeah. We've said about the Ravens and that kind of scheme. Well, you don't need a pass rusher. The Colts are the antithesis of that. They line up, they play coverage right in front of it. They want to get there with their edge guys. They don't have any edge guys. So that surprised me a little bit, but it is a deep draft for pass rushers, and they've got some draft capital.
What's your 3rd thing, Andy?
Oh, I forgot to think of it while we were talking about how about Breshad Perriman? $4 million over 1 year, who I like more than Funchess head-to-head, which is why I don't love the Funchess deal, because you got Perriman at 40% the cost. But you're right, the Colts did have the cap room, so I get it. I like Perriman going to Tampa.
He is a good fit in Tampa. My other two, because I gave you the Colts as my first one, KJ Wright returning to Seattle. I was sitting there all week thinking, you stupid idiots are going to let KJ Wright go, and they end up retaining him on a reasonable deal. So even if you don't like the age and the recent injury history, they're really not spending that much to keep him in town. And I like what the Bills did. I think they solidified themselves a little more up front with Mitch Morse they spent on him.
They needed two receivers. Him bad. That's a great move. That's a great move. A little pricey, but I get it. They need interior O-line mobility.
I think it's worth paying the premium a little bit. They bring in Kevin Johnson at cornerback, which is a risk-reward signing, but might be a nice reward. But I like the two receivers they brought in. I've always liked John Brown. Cole Beasley, I don't love Cole Beasley, but I like the idea of Cole Beasley just sort of being that. I think he's good for a young quarterback. I think having that guy who can sort of separate underneath is a nice guy to have around.
I wonder how it will work with Josh Allen, because Allen's not a precision guy, but Beasley's, I guess Beasley's best routes are out routes, which do take precision, but there's a little bit of a, it's not a tight window throw. It's an out route's got some, you got some room to let that route unfold. And he's great, very good on option routes, which those are also not timing routes. So Beasley, I think, can fit. I like that they've got some speed to stretch the field there in Buffalo. They've got a lot of speed to stretch the field. They don't have anyone really to build the offense fully around, though, in the passing game, that is.
That's okay. I think they got pieces. I think that two more pieces that are useful, usable pieces. And, you know, having a guy who can actually separate underneath. Look, I'm just curious to see how Josh Allen performs with a guy who can actually create some level of separation underneath, because he didn't have that at Wyoming. He didn't have it last year in Buffalo, and we'll see how it plays out.
I like it. I'm good with that. Beasley got half the guaranteed money he wanted, but I guess that's how it goes sometimes. He wanted a little bit more than he's worth. He's a good player.
He is. And look, I'm still surprised any of the receivers got money, because it really is a deep class at wide receiver this year in the draft, and as we say all the time, those rookie contracts, the guys are so cheap, so you know you can pay a dude like $500,000 instead of trying to bring in a free agent. You're bringing a new guy anyway, so there's always some risk involved.
Yeah, what you don't know though, will the rookie develop? Everybody thinks they will, but half of them don't, and so you pay in theory. This gets into the Beckham trade a little bit. Is it worth it because you get a known entity, a proven veteran, rather than an unproven, never before seen in the NFL player?
But yeah, you could. I would also argue with free agency, there's risk as well, not the same level of risk, but from a chemistry standpoint and a schematic fit standpoint, but also chemistry standpoint when you're talking receivers joining a new quarterback.
I would not counter-argue that, because I know that we are near the end of the show.
There you go. So that will be the official wrap of this show. Thanks, as always, to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. Thanks to our new producer, Brandon Nix. So if this show sounds wonderful, thank Brandon Nix. And if it sounds terrible, blame Brandon Nix. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm sure we'll have more moves to talk about as the week goes on, not to mention the guys on Wednesday, Albert Breer, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr will be able to clean up some of these week two free agent moves that we might not have had a chance to talk about this week. Keep the questions coming in. We'll have a mailbag soon. Talkback@themmqb.com. We are both on Twitter. We are both on Facebook. And please be sure to subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.